My voice will give out on me at times.
This is the 4th of November, 2005. Mm-hmm. I'm just putting the date in, Friday. And Barbara Donnelly is being interviewed. And can you tell me your date of birth, where you were born, like your education, some of your background?
Okay, I was born 12/4/18 in Terre Haute, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I lived there until I was out of college. Went to Indiana State Teachers College and got my BA degree from mm-hmm. there. Uh-huh. And got married in August after I graduated from high college.
So did you, when did you meet Ray?
I met Ray in high school. I double dated with my friend, who was his friend, and my girlfriend, and when they finally broke up, I ended up with Ray.
And it lasted how long?
63 years.
63 years. That was good. Oh, good match there. So, did you go to church when you were young? That went really
I was in the Brethren Church in those days, okay. And I was married in the church in Terre Haute. Okay. United Brethren Church.
I guess I'm not sure what United Brethren is.
It was related to the Methodists and later merged with the Methodists.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's now United Brethren Methodist.
Uh-huh. So then after you graduated from college, you got married and then?
Well, it was wartime, of course.
Uh-huh.
And we moved first to Indianapolis for 6 months and then Ray got a job with the Civil Service here at the Naval Ordnance Plant. He had to go to Washington for 2 months to study at the Naval Shipyard, mm-hmm. and then we moved here in March of 1942.
Okay. So
it was
early on.
Wartime.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he worked there until he retired uh-huh. after 32 years.
Yeah. Good. So then all your children were born here?
We were living there in Louisville uh-huh. for that
yeah,
whole time.
Yeah. So how did you find First Unitarian, or the Unitarian Church in general? Or
when I was in college, one of my professors, Dr. Zeke Shannon, was a Unitarian and a socialist, uh-huh. and so my in-laws thought, oh, Unitarian communist, because he's a socialist, he must be a communist.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But he went to Indianapolis to church every Sunday,
uh-huh.
and also we knew I knew a woman who in the YWCA residence, a teacher, who was a Unitarian, who also drove over to Indianapolis mm-hmm. to church. Mm-hmm. And that made, I knew a background for it.
Uh-huh.
And then
you admired the people that...
Right.
Uh-huh.
And didn't know much about it, but I knew pretty much why they went.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we moved here, we lived in South Louisville and rode the streetcar to downtown
mm-hmm.
and would pass 4th of York.
Right.
And they always had the wayside pulpit out the front with a quotation of some kind.
Uh-huh.
We had joined the Presbyterian Church that was 2 doors from our apartment.
Uh-huh.
And it got so that I was asking the wrong questions.
Uh-huh.
I kept speaking out during.
I can't imagine you speaking out.
And I knew it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
So we decided to come down to the First Unitarian.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Been there ever since.
Yeah. So what was your first impression when you first, you first came in? Who did you meet?
Well,
did you meet first? And
that was when Bob Weston was the minister
uh-huh.
here. And of course, people here thought he was pretty conservative. When I joined, they were still saying the Lord's Prayer every Sunday morning,
uh-huh.
and they, not too many years before, had dropped serving communion
mm-hmm.
service. But according to the history of the Unitarians, Boston thought he was that far-out radical Westerner
oh.
in Louisville.
Yeah.
So he was a wonderful minister in those years,
mm-hmm.
And it was during his second or third year here that we joined the church.
Mm-hmm.
So we were here all during Weston's ministry.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember, say, like your first sermon he talked about anything like that?
I just remember that my impression of the church over the years, in those early years, was that people would ask, what's Unitarian Church like? And I had to answer and say, well, don't expect each Sunday to be the same, mm-hmm. because you just never really know what our service will be like.
Mm-hmm.
It may not. While Bob was there, it was fairly formalized, but he would change it
mm-hmm.
pretty radically.
Mm-hmm.
Then as our later ministers came, it was a case of, well, will it be a dance group? Will it be poetry? Will,
right.
We never know exactly what we're
uh-huh.
going to have.
Uh-huh.
And I always liked that.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's neat. Well, who are some of the first people that you remember?
That's easy. George Gibson.
Yeah.
Ruth Weston. George uh-huh. was always at the back of church.
Uh-huh.
Ruth Weston greeted everybody
yeah,
that came in.
Uh-huh.
Phoebe Gibson and Madeline Leffler.
Uh-huh.
Those people were the ones who made the contact immediately with new people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I joined the Women's Alliance.
Uh-huh.
And that involved so many really fascinating women over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that down in my notes to talk about the different committees you were on, your activities. I'm sure there's just been probably more than you remember almost.
That's true, but I really didn't serve on any committee for a number of years, except we had children in the Sunday school,
uh-huh.
and I got involved in the Sunday school, and eventually, of course, the RE committee,
yeah.
which at that time was a sort of a lifetime committee. Once you went on, they didn't really change any membership. You were there.
Uh-huh. Now, did we have an RE director at that time?
Dorothy Schmidt was the RE director in those years.
Mm-hmm.
And Claudine Coulter was another woman in the RE committee. And the two of us decided that we didn't want to serve our lives in the same committee.
Mm-hmm.
So we changed the rules. And we had a rotating committee service.
Mm-hmm. Did the other committees do the same thing?
And eventually, when we organized the council, the other committees did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the RE committee was a long-time service in the early years.
Yeah. And well, now, as far as having an RE director who was paid, when did that start? Did that start
well,
when you were there?
Dorothy was all-purpose. She was the office secretary, and she was the RE director.
Mm-hmm.
And she pretty much served that double role most
mm-hmm.
of the time
mm-hmm.
until her last years when mm-hmm. she became more just the RE director.
Is she still alive?
No, she died
mm-hmm.
several years ago, but
mm-hmm.
she had two children, and eventually she moved out west to where her daughter was living. And we didn't hear from her. Oh, she kept contact with a few people here, but she moved back to Louisville and did not maintain a contact with the church in her last year.
Uh-huh.
And she died, I think she was living here when she died.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy had, I really don't remember all the details, but I know that my husband had to ask, was president of the board at a certain time period in there,
mm-hmm.
and as a result of a conflict between Dorothy and the board of directors and stuff, he
mm-hmm.
had to request her resignation.
Oh, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And she was a lovely woman, but she was totally obsessed with the church. She almost lived here,
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
For mm-hmm. sometimes I think she did.
Yeah, right. Well, with the RE, were there any, things that you did that were special or that you can remember, or maybe was it, I know you had like a Parker Club, I mean, when after
well,
it came they talked
the,
about that. And
the youth adult group, or the youth group, was in those days known as Liberal Religious Youth, LRY.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And my kids were very active in it.
Uh-huh.
And they were very active. The Sunday school was not growing very much
mm-hmm.
during those years.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a small group of high school kids. By that time, Bob Reed was our minister,
mm-hmm.
and his boys
uh-huh.
were very active in the youth group.
Uh-huh.
But there were children who didn't enjoy the kind of unstructured activities that LRY unfortunately became
mm-hmm.
With some of the sponsors. The early sponsors were, I remember definitely, were extremely good. David Good and his wife Nancy, and well, the name will come sometimes. We visited the people up in New York recently who were young couples, young married couples, and they had done excellent work with LRY. And then we began to get, sometimes we had a young soldier from Fort Knox who volunteered to be a sponsor, and that didn't work out well. And there was some, were some breaks in sponsorship, and but the kids were, that were active in it, were very active. Unfortunately, the end of the time my kids were in it and my involvement almost merged into the time when the LRY group became more involved in, no, I want to back up on that. It was the national group of LRY became less responsible for what was going on, and they convinced the board of directors of the board of the UUA to let them have control of the money that the board gave to our youth activities, and the leaders of the LRY nationally moved to Boston into an apartment, and there was little adult supervision, and that was the time that LRY sort of died. It was also the time at which drugs hit our church as well as other churches, and basically the organizational control just disappeared. You could edit this as you choose.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna, you're going to be able to edit it when we, well, if we ever get it transcribed, we're gonna let everybody edit it to see how that was, because I do remember that there, you know, I've heard from other people that it was, that there were some problems.
It was a rough time. Our kids here managed, at least while my kids were there, were very responsible up to a point. But in the next few years, things got kind of irresponsible, and things happened that shouldn't have happened.
Right. Well, talk about now, after when Bob Weston left, I think that one of the people I've talked to wasn't sure why he left, whether he was just, he had another job or whether he retired, or, and then the other people after Bob Weston.
Well, yes, Bob did, he retired from here. He had been here a long time. And I think it was just one of those things that the time came that he he needed to go to for his own good. After that, our next minister, we at that time we had an associate minister, the first one we ever had. You know, give me that name.
That's all right.
Don't think of it. Anyway, he was, well, your difficulty with a long-term minister is you always have those people who can't imagine anybody else being in. When Bob retired, he sort of pushed his associate minister into the role of our minister, which is not something that the UUA or any other church recommends, because the ties are too strong there. And he was truly, he was a wonderful speaker, but I'm afraid that I used to say he could read the dictionary and make it sound wonderful, but there wasn't anything in it. And unfortunately, he left under unfortunate circumstances after having divorced his wife and married a student. And I know that, again, I was involved at that point in having to say in a public meeting, it's time to leave.
Well, was he ever officially the minister then?
Yes.
Okay.
He took Bob's wet place.
Okay.
And he was not here very many years, but he again had a very strong group of people who he counseled psychologically. I think he couldn't make up his mind whether to be a psychiatrist or a minister, and he had people who were very dependent on him.
And was that Phil?
Phil Smith.
Phil Smith, okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I just, you know, heard, you know, his name, and then the next one is the one that died, right?
Yes, David Brown, and replaced him. And David was a very very good person, very solid, very, very intelligent. I think he would have worked out well here, but he had a brain hemorrhage and died very suddenly overnight. And
is Phil Smith still alive?
I think so. They moved. He returned here to Louisville many years later, and I don't know whether it was a matter of proving something or what, but the minister's residence that had been there that we had owned previously and moved into it when he came back here.
Well, interesting.
And he opened a bookstore and in Bardstown Road for a while. But I don't know, they weren't happy here and he moved back out to California where he was much happier.
Yeah, sounds like a California person.
He was a California person. He had graduated from Star King. And not that I have anything against Star King, but it, at that period of time, was developing very far-out ministers. I have a broken nail.
Well, you said that we owned a manse. Where was this, and how long did it?
On Bonnie Castle. And it was the tradition in those days that the church owned the, the minister's home. And he lived there. It was after that, well, it was before David Brown came, I think, the church, the decision was to pay a subsidy to the minister in lieu of providing a residence.
So did you use the money you got from selling the house to set up that, that fund?
At that time.
So is that where, so Weston lived?
Yes, Weston lived in the minister's home. And it was in the section of town where we had a number of members. Phoebe Gibson lived.
Right, she lived in the village.
And then after David Brown, we got Bob Reed.
Now, were you involved in any of the search committees? Or any
No, I was not on the search committee for any of them. And Bob seemed to make a match when he came at the time, and his boys grew up in the church. It was the kind of change that was coming to all the churches. For the first time, the minister's wife was not expected to be a sort of co-minister. And Jean had a wonderful career.
But she was, you know, she was still active with, in the
church.
So, let's see. Well, talk about a little bit about
committees.
Women's Alliance.
We missed committees. Well, after I served on the RE committee, I served on, well, I think I served every committee except finance. I know I served years on the House committee with Charlie Mitchell and Jess Schreiber, and we painted the room. In the summer, we'd paint the Sunday school rooms, and we worked with Georgia and fixing up the church all the time. That was, and I loved working on that group. And I also, I worked on the council when after we established the council. I was a council member and president
Of
the
council. Now, why was the council formed?
It was formed, I don't remember how we got started with it, but it consisted of the chairman of every committee and three outside members and the minister. Always attended, and the RE committee, or the RE director, they all attended. And it was intended as a way of keeping communication open between all the different committees. And it worked very well until about the time that women began working so much out of the home that they began to complain about that. About the number of meetings we were having, and we reduced the size of the committee of the council then down to elected members. And I have not been active in that area of the church since those days.
Right.
I don't know about that. Yeah. But I did serve on the Minister's Advisory Committee and personnel and you name it.
Mm-hmm. But the House Committee was your favorite, really.
I think so. I did during those years.
Yeah. You could really see what you did.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It made a big difference.
At one point, though, even after the House Committee was over, they elected me queen of the kitchen because I was always spending time in the kitchen straightening up. I worked on Tuesdays as a volunteer in the office for a number of years, answering the telephone. And when I wasn't busy, I'd go in the kitchen and try to straighten things up.
So
that's committees.
Yeah. So did you work outside the home? I didn't ask you.
Only early years. I did some substitute teaching after my kids got in school.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked all the way through the years of high school.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Number of years, but not regularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, were there any, as far as the House Committee goes, were there any significant things that were done to the building or anything that you can remember?
Oh, golly.
It was the same all the time I was there. Well, except for the platform and the church.
Well,
the organ,
I see. I think at one point in there, while I was on there, we had the major job done of repainting all the windows, and that was a very expensive and a very big job.
Mm-hmm.
It was during those years that we remodeled the church. It was before the fire, and we knew we needed to grow, and the plans were solicited to change the direction of the church or do something to make it more useful. I remember the plan that we considered and rejected. It was to turn the church around so that it did not face the way it did, to block off the part that at that time was the pulpit with a high wall that didn't go all the way up, but part way, and put in theater seating. And
was that the Jasper Ward plan?
That was Jasper Ward's plan, and it did not go over.
Yeah, I remember that. So were you involved in that, the organ and
oh, yeah.
When they changed
the Well, in there also was the time we tore out the organ.
Yeah.
In preparation for the new organ, and that was a massive job. I didn't happen to work back in the organ cleaning it out, but Charlie and Jess and some of the other men, and it was a dirty, dirty job. And the pipes were turned over to Charlie Lewis, who had big warehouse space at the time, and he stored them for many years, and just recently, the last few pipes were given to the church to use on the new organ that they're building.
And I do remember when we came, there was all this, the different groups arguing about the plan and what we were going to do, and the Gibson plan was the one which ended up being a platform.
it was quite an issue at that point.
Right. Yeah.
Another thing we established at that along in there was the memorial garden to use the outside ground for ashes. And I know we contacted the city to see whether there was any restriction against using it for ashes, and there was none. We couldn't bury, but we could put the ashes in. And among the earliest ashes put there were Comer Biggerstaff and Carol Whaley.
So was there a controversy about the memorial? I mean, it doesn't seem like a controversial.
Well, there was never an issue at all about that. When we built the, after the fire, when the patio was built, that was decided to be the best place to put the ashes for a while, but now it's too crowded and we are not supposed to use only occasional people who were around early on have been added to that.
So where are they now?
Ray's are still, his were put in the patio.
In the garden.
But the others are just all around in the
Yeah, I think Ann Brigham was in the front.
in the front and around the side. And the agreement was that no markers of any kind would identify the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the ashes were not to be buried in anything. They were mm-hmm. to be mixed with the soil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So whose idea was the memorial garden?
I was part to do that because I had seen one in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
Another Michigan church that was in our district. I was at that time Unitarian Universalist Service Committee representative from the Middle West,
uh-huh.
and I would go to the different churches and talk about the mm-hmm. service committee,
mm-hmm.
and they had a lovely garden outside their church,
mm-hmm.
set off by a brick wall in a curve,
mm-hmm.
and just a plaque on it
mm-hmm.
stating that the ashes of the dear friends of the church were
mm-hmm.
there. So
mm-hmm.
I brought it back and talked to it, and it seemed to get a spark, and
uh-huh.
the church decided to go ahead and do it. My biggest concern has been that we have never had a specific memorial gardens committee, because there are times decisions have had to be made
mm-hmm.
about what kind of plaque we would have, and keeping it up to date,
mm-hmm.
and keeping the map up to date. And at
mm-hmm.
one point, the map was almost lost.
Oh, really?
After
mm-hmm.
One of the ministers left, and it was in his files, and nobody else knew where they were.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm. But we do have it now. But
yes.
We don't have a committee, do we?
No, we don't have a committee, and we really need two or three people to
mm-hmm.
be in charge of that, saying that a memorial book is kept with those names in it,
mm-hmm.
and that the plaque has
mm-hmm.
kept up to date, and,
yeah.
and
uh-huh.
then decide there are decisions that only a committee and the board can make of who could go in there. It's been, at one point it was decided finally that only members of the church and their immediate family
mm-hmm.
could be.
Mm-hmm.
But then came the issue of what about people who have been active for many, many years and contributed, and what about them? And at one point one person wanted to bring his parents who were buried somewhere else. Those decisions had to be made.
Right. Uh-huh.
There needs to be a formal relationship
mm-hmm.
to do that.
Mm-hmm. So who is doing it now?
Not anybody, really.
I'm
not sure how it stands now. I pushed and pushed and pushed to get we had to have a bigger plaque.
Uh-huh.
And I pushed and pushed to get that
uh-huh.
done. And finally, the House Committee Chair now went ahead and did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done pretty much without any input, because he had to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, where is Catherine Curlin?
She's at Cave Hill, I think.
Oh, uh-huh.
She was not married
uh-huh.
at our church.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see, the Women's Alliance.
Yes.
Okay.
I was, at those days, Women's Alliance was, when I came, the church was the strong group.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Layman's League for men, and it met monthly with supper meetings. For many years, the Women's Alliance made their dinner,
uh-huh.
as usual. The Women's Alliance in those years also was primarily the housekeeping committee.
Mm-hmm.
They saw to it that if drapes needed cleaning, they were cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
If the carpet needed cleaning, they saw to it the house really did it. Every summer, people from the Women's Alliance went into the kitchen and took an inventory of all the china and the silverware and everything that was in there,
uh-huh.
and polished all the silver that we
uh-huh.
had
uh-huh.
for the year, including the punch bowl and everything.
Uh-huh.
And if something wore out, they got a new one.
Mm-hmm.
If it was the piano, they got a new piano out
uh-huh.
of their funds that
uh-huh.
they raised.
Uh-huh.
Or if the refrigerator wore out, they got a new refrigerator.
Yeah. So the Women's Alliance is raising funds and then spending them on the practical
right.
necessities of the church.
And they raised their funds by their Women's Bazaar at Christmas
mm-hmm.
and their silver tea
uh-huh.
that was held at Mrs. Lang's house, uh-huh. home in the apartments, Weisinger, Goldberg apartment.
Oh, okay.
And it was a beautiful tea. And if you knew which bowl to go to, it was spiked.
Okay. So who was invited to the silver tea?
Everybody could come, and it was you were expected to, a silver tea, you were expected to contribute silver.
Okay.
Well, of course, that doesn't go very far. But
right. So, okay.
And Mrs. Lang paid for the tea.
So this was all the women of the church.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What was Mrs. Lang's first name?
Yeah, Elsie.
Elsie Lang. Uh-huh.
And it was a big deal, beautiful apartment.
Uh-huh.
And then the Alliance structure was that there were committees. There was the service committee in the Alliance, there was the housekeeping committee, there was the committee that sent cards and took care of the ill, and they would have their own little separate meeting and sometime during the month, and then they'd have the general meeting. And there was always the sewing meeting, mm-hmm. where we sewed for the bibs for the children in the orphan's home, and those and the transition now. I think that Richard lost his spark for being here in the last years as his health broke down
mm-hmm.
somewhat,
mm-hmm.
and he's so much
mm-hmm.
better now that he's not fulfilling a full-time church.
Right, uh-huh. Yeah.
I think his health has improved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have we covered anything?
Let's see, we kind of...
Parsley or left something hanging?
Well, let's see, we didn't talk about the different controversial things. I think we talked a little bit about the remodeling and when the new organ came, but we have the sanctuary issue.
The what?
The sanctuary for refugees.
Oh, yes. That was in Bob Weston's years.
Bob Reed's years.
Yes, that became an issue. When the Vietnamese War was on, and refugees were being brought here to the United States, the Catholic Charities were bringing in Vietnamese refugees. And our church adopted a family. We were expecting a family.
Mm-hmm.
At the last minute, we got a woman and three children.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a lovely woman, but she was having eye problems. She had a condition that many Southeastern Asian women do have, or whip people have, in which the part of the eye lining grows over the pupil of the eye.
Uh-huh.
And shortly after she was here, she had to have surgery.
Uh-huh.
And she couldn't speak English, and we had some dedicated people
uh-huh.
who saw to it that she went to the doctor and got her to the surgery and everything.
Uh-huh.
And we rented an apartment for her on 2nd Street at Breckenridge, and got her children started in school.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, but again, as so often happens, it was a church decision in the beginning with great enthusiasm, but it ended up down in the laps of less than half a dozen people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we fulfilled our obligation to her, and she felt great loyalty to our church.
Mm-hmm.
She did not attend our church,
uh-huh.
but her three children, and eventually her parents were brought here, but they didn't like Louisville, and they moved to California.
Mm-hmm.
But Lon was a very, she got a job, finally working in a place that made egg rolls.
Mm-hmm.
She tried her best to support herself,
mm-hmm.
but, and of course she was living on refugee fund.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, she did move to California. And the follow-up to that is that we had Christmas cards back and forth every year,
uh-huh.
and she sent us an invitation to her oldest daughter's wedding.
Oh.
And we had a very dear friend in Los Angeles, and we had gone out to visit our daughter, and we drove down to L.A., and it was the week of the wedding, and we'd let them know that we would come.
Oh.
So we attended her daughter's Buddhist wedding in the big Buddhist temple that got in trouble because of the financial contributions to the Democrats. It's a gorgeous place. And we were treated as the guests of honor. Uh-huh. And we were placed on a platform at the reception.
Oh, my goodness.
With the parents of both families. She married into a Chinese family. Mm-hmm. We were placed with all of these older Chinese women with their blackened teeth from chewing beetle.
Oh, uh-huh.
And they didn't speak any English at all. Uh-huh. They must have had 400 guests at the wedding. Uh-huh. It was the biggest event I have ever been to in my life. Uh-huh. There was a meal after the ceremony. There was this huge dinner reception at a great seafood restaurant. It was just amazing.
Goodness.
And they introduced us as their foster parents.
Oh,
so we felt real honored, and they made the point that we had sponsored there.
Uh-huh.
But we represented the church in that deal. Uh-huh. Well, okay. Then came the refugees were escaping for sanctuary, and the issue was presented that some churches were accepting people living in the church.
Mm-hmm.
My personal reaction to that was, and I guess it carried more weight than I really thought it should, but I knew that we had considered at one time having to house some students in the church when we sponsored something for citizenship with Bellarmine College, with Spalding College. And we were supposed to bring students to live in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision was that the church simply wasn't suitable for people living in. We didn't have, it was a makeshift arrangement.
Was that before we had Haywood House then?
Yeah.
Because for a while we had someone living in there.
Yeah, but no, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. We must have had Haywood House. But it was being used, at that time. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
The idea was that they would be living in the building, in the church itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my statement was to the church, I think it's an excellent idea to give sanctuary, but I want to know who's going to take care of responsibility for feeding them and clothing them and seeing that they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the people who are going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that our tendency as a church has mm-hmm. been, after the initial enthusiasm
mm-hmm.
wears out, that we find we don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you have that committee, and it's set up
mm-hmm.
with people responsible to do this, I think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bob Reed didn't agree with me, and that was the only time in Bob Reed's
mm-hmm.
term here that,
mm-hmm.
that he had a feeling
mm-hmm.
of he felt this was more personal than it ever was. I didn't even think about it being
mm-hmm.
taking it personally,
mm-hmm.
but he apparently did.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that Bob mm-hmm. and I had to work out later,
mm-hmm.
in years later.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I remember that it was voted down.
Yeah, and I was only one voice, but I have since found out that my voice at annual meetings is more powerful than I sometimes expect it to
uh-huh.
be.
Uh-huh.
And I did not mean to, if the congregation voted to do it, and they voted a committee to take mm-hmm. it on, I would have been working on the committee probably.
Right, yeah. Well, I remember that, I think that, because it was illegal, too, I think that there was...
Now, that didn't bother me.
That was a concern, because I remember Gene Miller was concerned about
yes,
that part of it.
But that didn't bother
so
me, because we've been illegal in the past with abortion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
We had done plenty of that. That was illegal.
You want to talk about the abortion counseling part about?
Because we not only I did not get I was too young in the church in those years to really get involved in that, but I knew that they were counseling and referring to doctors
mm-hmm.
they knew would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that we also were providing transportation
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
Other places when they needed to,
mm-hmm.
But
that was an informal group within the church, people that were interested in that issue.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't.
It was never formally
was never
a
formal
committee
line.
Of the church, but
right.
they met in the church. There was the minister and the board people were
uh-huh.
on the committee,
yeah.
and
uh-huh.
they were sponsoring. I mean, we were active in Planned Parenthood, and
mm-hmm.
involved later in the organization of a Religious Coalition for Abortion Rights, mm-hmm. which now is for Reproductive Choice.
What about, we also were active in anti-war counseling, weren't we? Or
in boys that wanted conscientious objector status. Uh-huh. We would counsel them and help them get the papers lined up and references and stuff to prove that they had a religious commitment to peace. Mm-hmm. And not only just our kids, but to any young men who came.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very active in that.
How did people get to know that this was available at our church?
They just, by word of mouth, outside, the word in the community, mm-hmm. go to the Unitarian Church for counseling.
Uh-huh.
We weren't the only church that was doing that.
Uh-huh.
The Presbyterians were too, I think, and the Friends.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not a public announcement
right.
or anything
uh-huh.
like that
yeah.
for abortion counseling either. Both uh-huh. of those issues were, and they were controversial within our church.
Uh-huh.
There are people in our church who conscientiously cannot accept the idea of abortion.
Right.
And that's
uh-huh.
fine.
Uh-huh.
It's not a decision that any of us would accept
mm-hmm.
Without a lot of thought.
Right. Uh-huh.
But there are those of us who've had our kids that had to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It was not done by any of them lightly.
Uh-huh.
But uh-huh. but we knew, you know, there are more than one child that grew up in that church that
mm-hmm.
eventually in their teen or adult years had to make that decision.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, now the counseling for the draft conscientious objector counseling, was that done just primarily by Bob or
no,
were there
other
people involved in
No, there that? Were more people than that. I do not know who they were primarily.
Uh-huh.
But Bob was the strongest and,
uh-huh.
and of course the most respected because he was the minister.
Right. Uh-huh.
But there were other, George Gibson would have been involved in that if he
uh-huh.
were.
Yeah.
I think he was. I think that's where he died.
Uh-huh.
Because George was a conscientious objector.
Was he?
In uh-huh. World War II.
Uh-huh.
One.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. there were a number of people
mm-hmm.
in our church who felt strongly that conscientious objector status should be given to anybody who felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the Vietnamese War became so controversial.
Right.
It is today.
Yeah, so now, really. Let's see. We talked a little bit, I guess, about the RE directors. Who was prior to Ann Miller, who had the...
Barbara. Well, you'll have to look at the records for that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Barbara, she was a very sweet person and very
uh-huh.
Very intelligent. But she and the president of the board finally decided that they'd rather leave.
Part ways. Well, what about any other staff that stands out in your mind as far as like music or either our administrative staff or office?
We had the same organist for centuries. Dorcas Redding was.
Oh, okay. We haven't talked about Dorcas Redding yet.
organist for a long time, and the choir director, and that just was one that nobody questioned. You just
right.
went
uh-huh.
on and on and on and on and on.
Uh-huh.
Then we had B2 Kimbrough
yeah.
and his George Kimbrough was president of the board, very active president of the board
right.
and,
uh-huh.
In those years, and that was a very strong couple in the church, George and Myra.
I remember them. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, were they related to B2?
Yes, he was their nephew.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And he was our organist
mm-hmm.
and was a wonderful organist. And,
mm-hmm.
she left to go to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know exactly what he ended up
I saw him when I was, you know, working with the Printing House of the Blind.
Yes,
went to Florida on a trip, and he was there, and I talked to him there.
Oh, great.
In a meeting, so, and he had gotten married, so he was,
he was
working for a blindness organization,
yeah.
I believe, or, you know, somebody who they made old, you know, things that blind people would use, that, you know, useful things.
We visited George and Laura in California one time.
Oh,
And by that time, they were living in Long Beach, and typical to the, they showed us a tour of their house, and their bedroom consisted of a mattress on the floor with some flowers here and there. They were, he was trying to be a flower child, and she was being a good follower
right
of her husband, but she was her own self.
Yeah.
And then we visited them again a few years later, and George had bladder cancer.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he had retired.
Yeah.
She was, but she was still the stunning-looking woman she always had been, with a white streak of hair.
Yeah.
They were a great couple.
Uh-huh.
I remember because that was a controversial issue in the years that they had adopted the children, was the school in England, the thought you didn't teach the children to read till they they wanted to teach themselves. It was totally unstructured, and he wanted to send the children there, and Laura put her foot down and said, "I didn't adopt these children to send them away to school."
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay. RA director, an organist, and after BT. We got, I don't remember that we had what we had in there, but then came
Terry.
Terry.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't know whether there was somebody between there or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe we had some temporary people or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Of course, the loss of Terry was not by our choice, but he had gotten his back up and gotten a temper tantrum and said that they didn't. Were you involved in that issue? He wasn't going to play for Easter Sunday morning. He notified us Friday night. There was no choice.
I remember that turned out to be an issue.
And of course, the loss of the organ, and the loss of Mary Sue Brad's in the fire. The loss of Mary Sue Brad's wooden angel, and our. One that's what's his name?
Yeah, Hamilton.
Why can't I remember Ed Hamilton's name? You know, there are certain names that I'm stuck with.
I know.
And I cannot remember those names for the life of me until somebody says the first word or something.
Yeah. I know. I had the same thing. That was a shame.
Well,
that
if we're near the end, we want to go down and eat lunch.
Okay, I think you want to just
finish
up with talking about, I think you're talking about leadership, and that sort of come up all the way through, but the kind of thing that, you know, that we get enthusiastic about things, but then, you know, our leadership kind of falls off.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
You know, you could, you know, just a little bit about that and the future of the church, maybe in that respect.
We had the first woman president of a congregation in the UUA.
Is that right?
Mrs. Hugh Simpson.
Oh,
And she was president of the Lions, and then she became a board member of the church, and she became the president of the board.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first one in the UUA denomination.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Not Universalist, but in UUA.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And of course, we've always had strong women leadership.
Uh-huh.
There was Irene Bonstilley when she came back. There are so many retired military people who live here. And I have fun telling them sometimes about Irene and her years as a whack.
she was a wonderful character.
Our church has always been on, I think, pretty much by the Middle West, on the cutting edge of many activities. Boston thought we were for many years until they dealt with California.
Uh-huh.
But
So for the future, is that what's the critical thing for us to do in the future, do you think?
I don't know. I of course, from my standpoint, and I think it's pretty well known in the congregation, we have always accepted, since the very first gays came to our church and asked to meet, have their Metropolitan Church committee, or their meetings in our church, I recognized the fact that these were people that, even though they didn't subscribe to our theology, they needed a place to worship what they wanted. And that these were people that, at that time, it wasn't considered accepted generally, but they couldn't help who they were. And they were people like us, and they could be our children. And I think that even the denomination never understood that we were that far ahead of most of the other churches in the denomination. And then when we were faced with the early transsexuals, we had several. We had the young man going through changing to a woman. What was her? Just not long.
I don't remember.
You remember the slight built young man, and he became the girl. That was fine. It was a little bit strange, but to change from him to her.
Yeah, right.
But that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we were faced with the aggressive group of wanting the concept of open marriage, not open marriage, but that's what it used to be called, but our present group, it just felt to me that how one lives one's private life is their business.
Right.
And I have thought all along that the church should not take a stand of saying this is an approved group of the church or a non-approved group of the church. You're members of the church, and you take part in the church, but you do not go out and say, we are the Unitarian Universalists, whatever. I don't know what you want to call it, and that's what I thought all along. I think that the church should accept people that come, who come wanting to be members of that church, and wanting to espouse the concepts of acceptance and response. But I don't think that that gives them the right to take the name of the church to push their agenda. And I fought along that, and the church has been through a bitter battle over that with this small group of people, and that will be for the future to decide. But the denomination did not understand us on that issue, and they sent someone to talk to us, and he's coming back again, to talk to us on accepting gays. And we tried to tell them, that's not our issue. We don't have an issue over gays.
Right.
Our issue is over accepting people who choose to have multiple relationships in a marriage.
As
an organization. And that pretty well covers the complex.
So if, as we look at Unit to the future, where do you see us going?
I hope we'll still be accepting but responsible. That we will still say, you have to accept the people in the pew next to you, but they have to accept you too.
Right.
Well,
what about in a practice, like in a membership or in a financial way, do you think that we're...
Of course I hope we grow, but I hope we also grow able to support this church with the goals they have. And if they can't have their goals met, they'll have to cut their goals down. We cannot spend our endowment totally, although I don't approve of big endowments, but that money was given for the growth of the church and the maintenance of the church. We have to honor that obligation,
right.
I think. We can't constantly draw out of it. There's a certain amount of financial responsibility that simply has to go with membership in the church.
Well, what do you think are the strong points of our current minister? What has he brought to them?
Well, I think he's making he's making a role for himself in this church. I think time will tell how it turns out, I think that he's had to find his way. Mm-hmm. I think his relationship with people seems to be, he seems to be doing good in that relationship. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's for the future. It was just a few years ago that, you know, if you find it, suddenly you realize it's time that these people in their 40s and their 50s took the load mm-hmm. that they should. Mm-hmm. And we have done that. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be here for 10, 15 years from now to accept responsibility for decisions we're making now. Mm-hmm. But they are. Uh-huh. And so it's time to say no. Uh-huh. So I started saying no. Uh-huh. And I'm still saying no.
You're going to be the only elder stateswoman.
Well, you just have to.
Right.
Uh-huh. It's not your right uh-huh. to set this policy for the future. Uh-huh. Because the people uh-huh. that are here have to do that. Uh-huh. And if they change the direction, it's their job. Mm-hmm. If they don't change it right, and they spend the money down to uh-huh. the zero and the church fails, uh-huh. that's their responsibility. Uh-huh. On the other hand, if they use their responsibility wisely, they hope we'll grow, uh-huh. but maybe we won't. Uh-huh. Maybe we will be a church like this size church uh-huh. and always be a minority church uh-huh. and a conscience of the community. I hope uh-huh. so. Uh-huh. I hope we'll be the conscience of the community. Uh-huh. Yeah. But, because we were for many years.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you think we've gotten away from that?
No, I don't think we've gotten away from that. We still feel responsible, particularly in the areas of race relations, and mm-hmm. I think we're beginning to take a more responsible toward the not the political, but the community involvement. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're the church has great potential. Not in numbers. It will never be in numbers. Mm-hmm. I don't think, although Thomas Jefferson said he saw would see the day when all young men were Unitarian. I don't believe that. And I accept our history. Uh-huh. But our history was segregated because that's what society was.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we cannot blame our early people in the church for mm-hmm. even for having slaves or for having gone with what it was the way life was. Uh-huh. People just hadn't grown far enough. Mm-hmm. We've grown a long way since those days.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it's always been a sadness to me that we did not have more blacks mm-hmm. in the congregation. Mm-hmm. But their answer has always been, it's not our culture, social culture. Uh-huh. We don't feel comfortable right. there. Theologically, uh-huh. yeah. we'd like to be there.
Uh-huh.
And it hasn't just been yeah. one like that. Uh-huh. It's been, there are a number of them that would like to be in it.
Uh-huh.
But we don't we're not their kind of background.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I just thought we didn't talk about the fun things, like Couples Club. And
Well, Couples Club is a social organization, and it outlived its time when we didn't have so many couples.
Right.
But it was potluck suppers, meeting in people's homes, uh-huh. and it was a wonderful builder of relationships.
Uh-huh.
And I wish we had it since, and mm-hmm. Or something comparable to it.
Uh-huh.
But
was that, you think it was a builder of relationships because you would see pretty much the same people every month?
It was I don't think it really was the same people always, uh-huh. but it was a core of, yes, and we met in people's homes.
Right.
And we saw people where they were,
uh-huh.
and then of course we did meet in the church,
uh-huh.
But that was never quite as personal building.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go to the bathroom, and we're going to have to go downstairs
okay.
to get lunch.
Let's just turn this off.